to another week of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Chaptal. You'll find me at C70 on Twitter and at C70 at the Bat on the Cardinal Conclave. With me, as always, is Tara Wellman, who is at Tara Wellman at Twitter because she wants to keep it real. and she's at Bird Seeds and Bird Tales at the Cardinal Conclave and on YouTube. You know where to find Tara. And if you don't, you should by now. And so follow Tara on everything that she does, except for when she's going to the grocery store. That's just wrong. we have a better week to talk about this week. You know, last week, we were doing this show, and the Cardinals had won, like, once in the whole week. Well, this week, they reversed that, thankfully. Lost only once this week. Tara, it still feels like they're finding their footing, but it's nice to see some W's up at the end of the games, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll take 6-1 as often as you want to put that up as the record at the end of the week. But I tried to make a point without being too critical in a 6-1 week that I think the Cardinals have won a number of games that are not necessarily wins because they've played better. You know, you look at Adam Wainwright's start, and when your starting pitcher has 4 RBI, you're not going to count on that most nights. Well, then that turn around, and Mike Leake has a pair of RBIs of his own tonight, and that's great. I don't know that that really says a whole lot for the rest of the lineup when your starting pitchers are out hitting literally everyone. I don't know that that's a particularly sustainable way to create offense over the course of a season. And then you look at, you know, the series with the Brewers, and there were a number of plays that should have been made that weren't. There was, of course, the Jed Jerko Little League home run that should never have happened. A number of plays that were errors or maybe not technically, but that led to Cardinals runs without the Cardinals offense actually creating them. So I do think that the hitting is still a bit of a concern. The base running, as evidenced today, still pretty bad. The pitching has gotten better. I think there's still some concerns for a few of those guys in the bullpen that are getting the job done, but kind of Trevor Rosenthal style, where it's a terrifying experience just to get the job done. So, yes, they have a great week as far as the record is concerned, but I think some of the major concerns from the first 2 weeks are still pretty significant concerns going into a week where they're facing, again, NL Central competition, and they really need to keep sort of clawing back out of the hole that they dug for themselves in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, you won 3 Pirates games by the score of 2-1.
Right.
That's good, and that's very good from the pitching side of things, but as we saw, especially a couple of those games could have easily gotten away at the end of the ball game. And then you're right. You know, you had the game that they won on Saturday or Friday, maybe Saturday, that they went 0-for-14 with runners in scoring position. Like you said, they scored 2 home runs and the Jed Jerko, interesting trip around the bases. And then you, I guess that was Saturday. Friday night, you have the Wainwright game. Tonight, you have the Leake game. And so when you put all that together, the offense is still a concern. It doesn't feel like anybody. You know, I thought that we were seeing a bit of a breakout from Dexter Fowler with his 2 home runs on Wednesday. He'd had a game the night before where he, you know, drew a walk, got a hit. But unfortunately, he still seems to be struggling somewhat. And I think that seems to be the key right now. I think if Fowler could get on a regular basis, I think that would change the dynamic of this lineup quite a bit. But it just, I mean, because that's what we signed him for, right? I mean, that feels like that's what really needs to go to get this offense to click.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that the issue sort of compounds on itself when Dexter Fowler isn't getting on base at the clip that he normally does. Then Aledmys Diaz hitting behind him feels the pressure, and then Matt Carpenter behind him feels the pressure, and it just sort of ripples down the lineup. And when no one seems to really have the answer, it's hard to you feel like you just need one guy to really get it going, and then it'll relieve some of the pressure. On that note, I think that Randall Grichuk had a terrific weekend, and he remains a piece of this puzzle that I don't quite know how the Cardinals are planning to use him. But I do think even that would even itself out if the first four guys in the lineup were doing what everyone expected them to do. And that's not even, you know, I'm not sitting here watching them thinking, okay, Matt Carpenter needs to be Chris Bryant. Matt Carpenter just needs to be Matt Carpenter. And Dexter Fowler just needs to be Dexter Fowler. And then the rest of these pieces start to fall into place. So you're starting to see that wear a little bit on some of the guys. We saw it in Matt Carpenter today for sure. And, you know, they're taking poor at-bats a little bit harder than you would like to see them taking them, because they're just desperate for anything to start working. And, you know, then Dexter Fowler goes out with a heel issue, and that may or may not affect his ability to get on base, but it doesn't necessarily help the situation as far as him getting comfortable and being out there consistently. So, yeah, Dex is the spark plug, and there's a reason everyone, myself included, was so excited because of what he could bring to this team at the top of the order and how that would shake out down the rest of the lineup. I think he'll get there, and I think he'll be fine. We just haven't, unfortunately, seen it yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we're talking about this offense, I went and pulled up the stats, and I sorted it by OPS, and I am fairly sure you would not guess the top four players in OPS on this team. You know, first is Wainwright, which you take that out. I mean, you know, minimal at bats there, and he had that big game. So you toss that out. Jed Jerko, the only other person with an OPS over one. Jose Martinez is third, and good old Colton Wong is fourth at OPS on this team. And I think we have seen, before we get into Colton, let's go back to Monday when the Cardinals come into town, back into town after the Yankees. It is fairly obvious that John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny had some sort of sit down, because ever since then, Jose Martinez and Jed Jerko and Greg Garcia, they're playing a whole lot more. We've not seen Matt Adams, barely seen Matt Adams on the field, and we definitely haven't seen him in left field. Everything seems, you know, Johnny Peralta's now on the disabled list. It feels like Mo kind of laid down a little bit of law, doesn't it? I mean, maybe we're reading too much into that, but it just feels like all these things that Mike Matheny was doing the first 2 weeks now are not being happening. And, oh, look, they're 6-1 this week.
Yeah, well, I think it reiterates this point that there seems to be such a disconnect between the team that John Mozeliak envisions the Cardinals being and the way that Mike Matheny envisions this team winning. And the reality is, whether say whatever you want about the way that Mike Matheny thinks they should win, that's not the roster that John Mozeliak built. So you can't necessarily try to use a bunch of pieces that are from a completely different puzzle to create your own picture. That's not how this works. So it does seem like there was a conversation that sort of reestablished their spring training goals. And I can imagine it being something of John Mozeliak saying, listen, these are the guys you have. And it doesn't matter what they've been in the past. It doesn't matter what you want them to do. This is what's happening. These are the players that you have. You've got to figure it out at this point. So you have to play the guys that are hitting well. You have to play the guys that give you a defensive advantage, at least in theory. And you have to make that change now and not go back and forth on it every single day. So unfortunately for Matt Adams, that has taken him almost entirely out of the equation. And the mystery respiratory illness for Johnny Peralta has taken care of that dilemma for a little while anyways, but you're right. They've suddenly made, they turned the corner a little bit in the way that they're playing. And while there's still some room to grow, it definitely looks like they're putting themselves in a much better position to succeed. And you know, that's ultimately all you can ask as far as the manager is concerned, is that you put them in the right position to succeed, and then the guys have to execute on the field. And we've seen more of that to some extent this week than last, with guys in the position to do so.
And it's obviously helped that they've stepped down in competition a little bit. I mean, they played the Cubs, the Yankees, the Nationals. I mean, granted, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Reds up there, but, you know, at the time, and even just until recently, the Reds were first-place team. So, you know, to play the Pirates, who are a team that should be on their level, and that's probably why we saw a lot of, you know, very close games, and then the Brewers, who have gotten off to a good start, but the Cardinals have always done pretty well against, it's a little bit more comfortable to play those guys, and you get away with a few more of the mistakes that maybe the team has made. It is just interesting to see how this, and you know, again, you haven't, we continue to say it's early, but, you know, 10% of the season is now gone, or more so. There does come a time, you know, this, when we're recording the show next week, we'll be done with the first month of the season, and at some point in time, you do have to start wondering if this is going to be a trend. The averages are starting to come up a little bit because you don't get to do negative averages in baseball. So they had no other place to go. But it would be nice to have, you know, a good week of some solid, you know, I don't think we even need a whole lot of home runs, which are nice. But I think right now we would just like a few innings with 2 or 3 hits and, 4 or 5 runs put up without the aid and assistance of errors from the other team.
I've had a couple of conversations this week about just that, and the fact that because of the way that this team is built, we saw them hit a lot of home runs last year and miss the playoffs. They missed the postseason while they hit as many home runs. You know, they far exceeded the expectations of the home runs that this roster would hit. Well, not this roster exactly, but you get my point. They weren't necessarily expected to be a big home run threat last year either. But we've seen a lot of solo home runs so far as the Cardinals' home runs go. And that's great, but when you're down by 4 and you're in the 8th inning, a solo shot with 3 guys that are going to strike out behind you, it's not really helpful. I would much rather see them, like you said, focus on base hits and walks and, you know, a double in the gap that scores 2 instead of trying to be the hero every time at the plate when you can only get 1 back on a solo home run. When you're down by 4, that's not how math works. So, I think that we've seen a little bit of that. You mentioned Colton Wong earlier. We've seen some of that from Colton. Of course, he did have a home run as well, but we've seen some of that from Randall Grichuk as well, who, like I said, has played really well the last couple of days. Certainly against the Brewers, maybe not quite the same competition as they saw in the week before, but when guys like that start doing just that, not necessarily trying to hit home runs, not trying to be some sort of hero, but just putting the ball in play and then letting the rest of the game happen around them, that's when I think this team will be able to succeed, because that's the kind of offense that you can count on when you get guys going where they need to be. The home runs will come, but you certainly don't want to be a team that depends on a home run to keep yourself in a game.
Absolutely not, because, you know, it's much more, you know, Average hitting is a little bit more consistent than the big fly hitting, even though we really get excited about the home runs for a good reason. Of course, you know, again, the Cardinals did win this week because without the offense and because the pitching is looking somewhat better. The starting rotation is pretty strong right now. In fact, we got the good game out of Adam Wainwright. He still didn't get past the 5th, but, you know, 9 strikeouts and, you know, besides the fact that he just, you know, was Babe Ruth on the whole thing, which I'm sure he talked about much more than his pitching. I don't know that it just, I think that just reiterates what we're going to see out of Adam Wainwright going forward. We're going to see some interesting good starts. We're going to see some not so good starts. I think every time he goes out there, we're going to just have to guess what's going to happen. But, I mean, Lance Lynn and Michael Wacha and Mike Leake have proven that the back end of this rotation, at least right now, is better than the front end, because Carlos Martinez is just not what we really want. And I guess that's reasonable. I mean, he's still young. He had a great year last year. It's not surprising that he might, you know, early on step back and really kind of develop. But, you know, that start this week that he had against who was he starting? The Brewers, where he gave up three runs in the first inning. I mean, that with this offense, I mean, they were lucky enough to tie it, but you can't plan for that. I mean, you've got to come out with your game from the first pitch, and he just didn't seem to have that this time.
Yeah, with Carlos, it's a strange situation because in the same inning, even, he can look like he just doesn't have it, and he can look like he's absolutely unhittable. So I'm not really sure what the disconnect is with Carlos at this point. And I know that people are pretty sensitive to the sort of the mental side of the game conversation when it comes to Carlos, because we're all a little bit tired of hearing that as the primary narrative for a kid that we've watched come in and pitch in some pretty big situations for someone that seems to have, according to the commentary and to the reporting sometimes, this massive mental impasse at times. And, you know, the word disinterested has been thrown around. And while I understand sort of the sensitivity to that line of thinking, I do think that it's fair to say there's been a difference in Carlos Martinez in those moments where he, quite frankly, can't find the strike zone at all, and when he strikes out the side. The strange thing is that it happens within the same inning. So I don't know quite what the source of that is, but there is definitely something different for Carlos in his last couple of starts and his opening night start. I was actually talking to a little bit of promotion. I was talking to some guys from Toronto Blue Jays podcast while we were recording an interview for their show that will come out on Monday. And they were asking about the starters that the Blue Jays will face, one of them being Carlos Martinez. And I basically told them, I don't know what you'll see, because I have no idea. It could be 12 strikeouts, but that same game could also have 8 walks. So your guess is as good as mine at this point. And that's something that I think, again, like with Dexter Fowler, will work itself out. But it's not what you want to see from the guy that you pretty much tabbed as the ace of the staff before the season ever started.
Yeah, it's just, you're right. I think it's just that inconsistency that we're seeing. And it's not, I mean, you watch Twitter and, you like you said, people complaining about his mental state, that he's disinterested, that he needs to cut the hair. I mean, all this kind of stuff in the first inning. Well, you know, in the second through the fifth, he's shutting everybody down. Nothing has changed. But, you know, so it's, you can't really, you know, tie it back to those things. And then, you know, he got burned by Eric Thames, who is burning everybody right now. So, I mean, that happens. So it just feels like, yeah, it's just a learning process. And maybe, you know, I know some of us have talked about it on Twitter. Are the water home run celebrations in this year? Because I haven't seen one.
I have seen a much more tame water celebration. It was like a replay that was almost in the background of something. Like, that wasn't actually what they were replaying. I don't even remember when it was, but I did see kind of an obscured view of what I thought was a water home run celebration. So maybe it's happening, but not as demonstratively, or maybe Mike Matheny decided he was over the fun. There's music in BP now, so that's the limit to the fun that can be had.
Well, and although I don't know that the club is really excited about that, being that they have a bobblehead coming out next week of this stuff.
Right.
But which is going to be amazing. I mean, that's going to be like one of the biggest sellers of the year, I think. I can't imagine what they're going to go on for eBay on the next day, but, I don't even know that I would blame it on Matheny on that. It may be that Carlos thought, hey, I've signed this big contract. It's time for me to, you know, step into this ace role. And this ace role means, you know, because, you know, the ace role has been Chris Carpenter. It has been Adam Wainwright, who can be goofy, but not necessarily on his, you know, pretty much all those extra days. He may feel like that he needed that maturity, and I don't know that that works for Carlos Martinez. You know, he may need that outlet to have fun, and I think we enjoy it more when he's, you know, stacking cups and splashing water and all that kind of stuff. At least some people do. I guess not everybody, but you know, I have no problem with him having a good time while he's out there and being effective, as long as it's, you know, not affecting him. So I don't know. I think that's going to be something interesting to watch, if maybe he has to still try to determine how he can be this leader ace while still being Carlos Martinez. It may be an interesting thing to watch as it goes on. And hopefully, you know, at the end of next month, we've completely forgotten about it because he's on a roll and it doesn't really matter. But, you know, when we see him struggling right now, it seems to be the thing to talk about. The bullpen, as you and I were talking before we started, it's getting in pieces better. you know, there are pieces like Trevor Rosenthal and Matt Bowman. Matt Bowman, of course, may lose his arm because I don't know that there's been a game he hasn't pitched in yet. But Trevor Rosenthal and Matt Bowman have been very, very good. You know, Miguel Soloviec has been pretty good. He had that one bad game against New York. But then you get into Sung Won Oh and Kevin Seacrest, some different worries for those two guys, but there seems to be concern. Let's talk about Oh first. He, like you said, he's getting the saves, but he's definitely learned from the feet of Jason Isringhausen and the bad Trevor Rosenthal. Things have been a little dicey this week, and not even this week, all year long. He's just not been as effective.
I kind of used the bullpen as an example of my concerns about the entire team at this point because, yeah, they're getting the job done, but are we really okay with the way they're getting the job done? That's sort of how I feel about, oh, now today, it was the third day in a row that he was out there for the save. Thanks, Jonathan Broxton. But I think that had something to do with it, but it is sort of beside the point because he hasn't quite looked like himself all season. So I think that, you know, he's not a guy that's going to come. He's not the Trevor Rosenthal type. He's not going to come in and throw 100 miles an hour and then follow it up with a 78 mile an hour changeup. That's not his game. That's not what he does. And without some of the late movement or without some of the pinpoint accuracy, he's not as effective. I'm not the pitching expert as far as breaking down whether that's a mechanical issue or, you know, whatever it might be. But it doesn't take an expert to watch him pitch this year and realize he's not the same guy as he was last year. I do think that in the two saves prior to Sunday's game, he looked much better. Again, the Brewers, so to some degree you have to factor that in, but the middle of their order is still pretty tough. And as you mentioned, Thames has been hitting off of absolutely everyone. So, you know, you get through pieces of that Brewers lineup and you feel pretty good about that. But today was a struggle and we've seen him struggle in the past. And, you know, the idea has even been floated through the Twitterverse that maybe Trevor Rosenthal gets his job back before the All-Star break after all the talk about him being a high-leverage, multi-inning reliever. They may, in fact, need him right back where he was when they took him out of the starting conversation. So I think that there's enough concern that you start looking at what the other options are, but I also think that there were moments where he looked better this week than in the first 2 weeks. So that's the hope, but it is still pretty terrifying watching him try to close out games so far this year. And we've had that experience enough that it'd be nice just one season maybe to not feel a sense of dread at the end of every single close game.
Well, I think every once in a while we get that season. The problem is the next season. You know, Rosenthal had a very good season, and then we think he's going to be great, and he's terrible, and O takes over, and then we think O's going to be great, and not so much. It's just, but that's the nature of relievers. I think that's to some degree with the small sample sizes that you get with them, you can't ever be completely sure. I mean, there's only one Mariano Rivera, and that's there's a reason for that. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Owen Rosenthal mix and match in the ninth, perhaps, things like that. Of course, that would require a little bit more creativity from Mike Matheny than we're used to. And it can backfire too. But I think there are times that, you know, O would look good, and there are times that Rosenthal would look good. And now that you've got, you know, if you could ever fix Kevin Seacrest, which is again our next topic, you know, maybe that there is to the, with the way Brett Cecil is pitching, you got a lot of late inning options, that you could make work if you don't want to lock them into Cecil does the seventh and Rosenthal does the eighth and O does the ninth. You know, that's good. That's well and good, but, having a little bit more flexibility and creativity in theory, is a good idea. Kevin Seacrest, I don't even know. When I wrote a post earlier this week, he had walked, he was walking a batter for every two outs that he has, and that's not a good ratio for a reliever. It's not a good ratio for anybody. It'd be really bad for a starter, but it's not good for a reliever. He did say something about a shoulder, that his shoulder is still bothering him, maybe not completely healthy. I keep waiting for that DL move, because it just feels like that's going to happen. I don't know. I know that people keep talking about, well, just keep running him out there, but again, with this offense, it's demoralizing to take a 2-1 lead and turn it to 4-2 loss all of a sudden. I don't know how long they can do that.
Yeah, I don't really think they can afford to just take that risk. I don't think they can just run him out there and hope that whatever is wrong just figures itself out. I also think the writing was kind of on the wall when they were asked about whether or not he was injured, and the response was basically, we don't really know.
Well, that's
so I'm
honest.
Not sure. Yeah, honest, but concerning nonetheless. that there may or may not be an issue there that they either have not identified, or there hasn't been enough communication about what seems to be going on, or yeah, I don't know. That was a little disconcerting to me when the response was not, we're trying to figure out what exactly is going on, and we'll let you know when we know. Even that is basically saying we don't know, but to just come out and say, I don't really know what's going on. I don't know. Maybe it's refreshingly honest. Maybe it's a little bit frightening. But nonetheless, I think the reality is everyone seems to think there is something wrong. That's more than just a mechanical issue, or more than just he's been used a lot in the last two seasons, which may or may not circle back to what the root of the problem is, but may not be the actual physical issue at this point. But you look at a guy whose velocity is dropping off as rapidly as his is, you've got to believe that all the innings that he pitched and the injury that he dealt with to some extent last year may or may not be resolved. It seems like all signs point to the fact that he's just physically not right. What the extent of that is certainly is to be determined, but it doesn't feel like a situation where you can just keep putting him back out there and watch him continue to fail like they did with Trevor Rosenthal last year until 2 months later you go, oh, is it a problem that my shoulder hurts? Like that yeah. You shouldn't have to wait for that to be something that the guy who can't throw a fastball anymore comes up with. So hopefully they get home and do some tests and figure out if there is something physically, structurally wrong. And if not, then you have to sort of reevaluate and find ways to use him to get him the work that he needs without damaging your own chances to win, which in 2-1 games, those opportunities don't come along very often. So that's an entirely different challenge.
I guess it's probably just as well that they said they didn't know, because you wouldn't really trust the medical staff to say, you know, that they knew what was going on anyway. I don't think it seems to be.
I guess I guess we don't know is better than no, he's fine.
Yeah, because then everybody's like, oh, he's going to get surgery tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah.
That seems to be the default, at least at some people. It is very disconcerting because, I mean, that was having Kevin Seacrest was one of the big pieces for this bullpen this year. When you looked at all these options, you know, when everybody was supposedly healthy and everybody was supposedly good, with Seacrest and Cecil and O and Rosenthal, I mean, that just shortens games so much. And having people that could, you know, in theory, never get overused because you can mix and match and things like that. But when you can't do that, and again, I think some of that, and we go back a little bit to Bowman being pitched a lot, and people like, well, Mike Matheny's just going to wear him out. Well, and that, I mean, there's some truth to that, but there's also the fact that the offense is playing 2-1 games, and he doesn't trust a Jonathan Broxton out there in a 2-1 game. Nobody right. trusts a Jonathan Broxton out there in a 2-1 game. We weren't sure about him in the 6-2 game today.
Didn't work out so well, did it?
Exactly. I mean, he's been pitching better, but I mean, he is. I mean, Jonathan Broxton, if he's going to pitch, is a low leverage guy. He pitches when there's four or five runs, and you've got some cushion because if he's off, he's bad. You know, and so. And you can't throw, you know, Trevor Rosenthal. I mean, he's not going to throw Trevor Rosenthal in the sixth or anything like that. So, I mean, there really were fewer options. I feel like the bullpen is getting a little bit more to where Mike can trust them a little bit more. Like I said, with Brett Cecil pitching better this week and some other options. And, in fact, they've got 8 guys down there now with Tyler Lyons coming off the disabled list. It feels like the bullpen is getting better. It's just, you know, a lot of their good work could be undone if O doesn't pitch well in ninth innings. So I think that's something to watch this week and see if how that pans out. You're right. As they get back home, off day tomorrow, I mean, we could see a roster move and putting him on the disabled list. And I don't know if they'd bring up a hitter or another pitcher or what that would be. But I think that's something to watch. Various and sundry items to finish our show tonight as we've gone past a little bit past our 30 minutes. Eric Fryer started a game today. Not only did he start a game today, he started 2 games this week. Eric Fryer has 14 at bats this April. Last April, he had a total of 11, including, you know, Fryer has 3 starts this year. He only had 2 all of last April. Unfortunately, he's not hitting like he did in last April, but that's another story. It feels like, and I think that also kind of flowed out of John Mozeliak's discussion, because when he comes to the media and he says, hey, I don't know, maybe Molina's hurt because he's not playing very well, you know, defensively. I mean, the kind of that thing. And then Fryer makes 2 starts this week. It's almost like, hey, Yachty, we've signed you this contract, but you're going to have to learn how to sit down. I'm just very surprised, though, to see, like I say, 3 starts out of Eric Fryer, especially at a time when the offense is struggling and Molina is one of the few guys that is hitting a little bit.
Yeah. And maybe the year that he did have, you know, before they traded him to the Pirates, didn't trade him to the Pirates, but nonetheless, the year that he put together last year may have given Mike Matheny enough confidence in him, both with the pitching staff and offensively, that he's not necessarily looking at a situation where taking Yachty out of the lineup on any given day could be the make or break decision in the result of that game. I think that there's a trust factor there with Eric Fryer this year that probably plays into the way that Mike Matheny fills out that lineup card. But I also think you're right. There probably was some level of discussion that, look, Molina's our guy, and we want him to be our guy for the next 3 years. So we'd like for him to not be injured in the first 3 weeks. So I don't know how much of that conversation was direct between John Mozeliak and Yadier Molina. If it was direct at all, it probably had to come that way, because I don't know that Mike Matheny could convince Yachty that he needed to sit down. But it's a good thing to see, both in that the Cardinals can win without Yadier Molina at times, but also that this early in the year, they're already making a very obvious effort to not overuse Yachty to the point of exhaustion by the All-Star break.
Yeah, they've won all three of Fryer's starts this year.
Yeah.
It is kind of interesting that that those few at bats, because like I said, didn't have a whole lot. He hit well in St. Louis, he didn't have a lot. Engendered more trust with Mike Matheny than 3 years of Tony Cruz. And again, I'm not saying that Tony Cruz should have played more, but that was what we were told. I mean, that was what we were told is that Tony Cruz could start for a lot of teams in the league. But when Tony Cruz, was the backup to Yadier Molina, he got like, five at bats a month. So I'm just surprised that, Eric Fryer was able to. Of course, Eric Fryer is a veteran. He's a guy that's been around. And so I guess that plays into things as well. But I'm just a little surprised. I'm not arguing with it. I think it's a very good idea to have Yadi rest. And in fact, Fryer has started the last two games that Mike Leake has pitched. And I want to say, I may be wrong, but he may have, at one time last year, there was this, one of the catchers, and it may not have been Fryer, because we went through like a whole bunch of backup catchers last year. But somebody else was like, I think it was Fryer, it was Leake as well that they caught. And I think that's fine. If Leake, I don't know that it's Leake can't pitch to Yadi. Obviously, that's not happening. But it's a good thing to give a guy a personal catcher and say this gives reason to for Yadi to have every fifth day off, or almost every fifth day off.
Yeah, I don't love the idea of this personal catcher thing, mostly because it just annoys me that anybody gets to that point where they could, that you haven't pitched to that guy your entire career. I mean, there's got like I get you, there's a comfort level, but it just it, on principle, it kind of annoys me.
You're just saying that because of David Ross. I mean.
I'm really just saying that because the guys who have personal catchers kind of annoy me.
Well, that's okay. So you're saying about John Lester, and that's fair. I mean,
Right.
that's fair.
But I, to your point, look, if Mike Leake can throw to someone not named Yadier Molina just as successfully, then that makes it real easy to give Yadi a day off every now and then. I don't know that I expect it to become a personal catcher type scenario, but it makes it a much better option or a much simpler option for someone like Mike Matheny to go ahead and write Fryer's name in there when he knows it's a Mike Leake start and there is clearly a level of a comfort level and enough chemistry between the two of them as far as how they're calling the game and they're on the same page that sure, that's great. Go ahead and take advantage of that. I like I said, on principle, it kind of irritates me, but if it works to their advantage, you might as well go for it at some point.
Yeah, and it looks like looking at the schedule, Leake will pitch on Saturday, which is a day game after a night game. It may be a good time again for Yadier Molina to sit, and we'll see if that happens. It's just something again to watch. I guess that's about it for Cardinal news this week. Again, the Cardinals will be playing off day tomorrow. Then they've got the Blue Jays in town for the first, one of those rare teams that comes through St. Louis, and then they'll play the Reds on the weekend. Tara, is there anything we have not covered or anything about this coming week you'd like to touch on before we wrap it up?
Well, I think that there was a lot this week. There was a lot of strange baseball this week. So as far as the next week, I think this is a big opportunity. Obviously, the Blue Jays are not playing well either. They haven't had a turnaround week like the Cardinals have had. So as much as I liked the guys from the Blue Jays podcast, I'm hoping that that trend continues this week for the sake of the Cardinals. But it's another week to try to get better. And I think that's what I would like to see as much as the wins. Don't get me wrong, the wins are much needed, especially when you turn around and face the Reds, who have been playing well so far this year. But I would like to see that offense start to click in. I would like to see Matt Carpenter not be so frustrated that he gets himself thrown out of a game after an at bat. And if that starts with Dexter Fowler getting on base, so be it. If it starts with the bottom half of the lineup doing what the top half can't, then I'm okay with that too, just as long as there starts to be some consistent production somewhere.
You look at the schedule, not the schedule, the standings. That's what I'm trying to say. And the Cardinals now sit in third place, a game and a half out of the Cubs. And if you know, again, this time last week, that was almost unheard of. you could not imagine that they would actually be able to get back into this. And they've been fortunate in the fact that the division has not run away. Nobody's run away with the division while they've been struggling. And in fact, with the day off tomorrow, if Pittsburgh and Milwaukee beat the Cubs and the Reds, then they'll be tied for second in just a game out before they play again. That's all you could hope for after a start like this. So they're still in it. The season's not over yet, but you're right. They do need to spend some time getting better this week and being a little bit more consistent, especially on the offensive side of things, and make us feel a little bit more confident if they do get down a run or two that they were able to come back. They have done that this week, but I don't think anybody expected them to do that this week. So I'm pretty sure when they were down 3-0, there was a lot of clicking of the TV off before Colton tied it back up. So, all right. Well, until next week, I'm Daniel. That's Tara. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.